Thanks once again for downloading and listening to one of our podcasts. This is a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. And we are recording this as I'm putting this out as a tribute to the sad passing of Celtic legend Billy McNeil. It's a tale from the Celtic Wiki of the 67 Cup Final. You may have heard it before, but it's appropriate to put it out now. Billy McNeil always talked about the special romance about a wonderful club, and what could be more iconically romantic than a club founded by immigrants, and one of its most iconic images is a captain who's the grandson of Irish and Lithuanian immigrants, who in lifting the trophy becomes the most prominent British footballer of his day. And his iconic image, smashing the glass ceiling for immigrants all over the world, where Celtic became the people who broke that barrier of a Latin country-dominated European competition and transformed European football, breaking it from the icy cold chill of the more defensive style of football and bringing back attacking football. Anyway, enough of me. This is the Human Torpedo and the Lisbon Lions.
When the Lions devoured Catenaccio, another slice of Celtic history from the Celtic Wiki. The image of a sweat-soaked Billy McNeil hoisting aloft the European Cup has become a treasured icon to Celtic supporters. It symbolises the club's greatest ever achievement and provides a constant reminder of just how high this great club can reach. The rightful reverence given to that famous night in Lisbon is an eternal tribute to the fact a homegrown team from the west of Scotland achieved the seemingly impossible by lifting European football's greatest prize. That feat alone is worthy of celebration, but in truth, it's only part of what makes the story of Jock Stein and the Lisbon Lions so special. To fully comprehend the magnitude of this achievement, you have to understand exactly what Celtic had to overcome in the heat of the Portuguese capital. Helenio Herrera's Inter Milan Celtic should have been a mismatch. It wasn't so much David versus Goliath as David against Goliath's big brother. With his slick back, jet black hair and stylish designer suits, Herrera looked every inch like a man born to manage a money-laden Inter. Yet Herrera's roots were every bit as humble as a former Lanarkshire miner who would eventually deliver the fatal blow to his most remarkable of careers. Born in Argentina in 1910, the son of a Spanish anarchist, Helenio Herrera moved to Morocco as a child, and it was on the dusty backstreets of Casablanca that a future football aristocrat first fell in love with a game that would make his name. His professional life in football would begin in France, where he earned a living as a rather average journeyman defender. In 1945, Herrera would begin his managerial career, taking the reins at his former club, Batum. During the next 14 years, Herrera would manage 6 different clubs in 3 different countries, France, Spain and Portugal. His first real taste of glory came with Atletico Madrid, when he led the Spanish capital's second side to 2 league titles in 1950 and 1951. In the spring of 1958, the Wanderer arrived in Catalonia. His plan was to mastermind the revival of Barcelona. The Catalans were finding life tough, living in the long shadow cast by the scintillating success at home and abroad of a majestic Real Madrid. Yet, in an astonishing first full season, Herrera led Barca to a domestic league and cup double, while in Europe, the Catalans took home the Intercity Fairs Cup. The league title was retained the following season, as a man now referred to as the Wizard continued to weave his magic. But despite all this, not everyone was captivated by his spell. He may have been the son of an anarchist, but there was not a hint of his father's political philosophy in Herrera, the manager. An ultra-strict disciplinarian, he He made no attempt to disguise his contempt for anyone unwilling or unable to conform to his tough regime. Herrera's achievements at Barca should have made him a king among the Catalans, but his arrogant dictatorial style instead made him a figure equally loathed as loved. As Franco would testify, the Catalans had little time for dictators. Consequently, when Barcelona were humiliated 6-2 in aggregate by Real Madrid in the 1960 European Cup semi-final, it was an easy decision for a Barca hierarchy to make, Herrera their scapegoat. Despite two league championships in his many years, he was sacked. It was a decision Barca would regret much more than Herrera. By the start of the next season, Herrera had moved to Italy, where he had been lured to Inter Milan by club president Angelo Moratti. An oil billionaire, Moratti's dream was to build a club which would wrestle from Real Madrid the title of the most successful side in Europe. His appointment to Herrera was a moment when that dream started to become a reality. With money no object, Herrera and Moratti set out on building a team to conquer a continent. Hard cash obviously helped pay for their finest materials, but the real key to success was Herrera, the man who was to become the architect of a team which would be christened Grande Inter, the Great Inter. With Herrera at the helm, Inter soon became a dominant force both in Italy and Europe. Between 1961 and 1967, the Milanese side won three league titles, two European Cups, and two Intercontinental Cups. It wasn't just silverware they collected. Their success on the continent ensured the club developed a huge nationwide fan base, which saw Inter fans springing up in villages, towns, and cities all across Italy. As for lyrics to a certain Celtic song declare, this truly was the team all Italy adored. Adored as they were, there was also no shortage of critics. In particular, those who prescribed the beautiful game found Inter's style of football a little too pragmatic. For purists, there was a deep cynicism to Inter's play and a win-at-all-cost attitude which no amount of trophies could justify. Most of his criticism came from Inter's frequent reliance on the infamous Catenaccio system. Catenaccio, which literally translated means the padlock, was the notorious ultra-defensive style which was first introduced to the game by Swiss coach Karl Rappin in the 1930s. But while Rappin may have invented Catenaccio, there is little doubt it was Herrera who perfected it. It would, however, be wrong to dismiss Herrera's Inter as purely a defensive side. Sure, this was their key strength, but they also posed a goal threat from virtually every outfield position, racing forward in rapid, lethal counter-attacks. Herrera was one of the first coaches to utilise his fullbacks as an attacking force, and this is evident in the fact that magnificent left-back Fichetti scored more than 70 goals during his illustrious career. Like a cornered snake, Inter's natural instinct was to defend. But when the moment came, it could also attack with a deadly swiftness. While no one could question Herrera's success on the pitch, plenty raised eyebrows at his methods off it. Herrera encouraged his players to prepare for matches through meditation, and before games, he would gather his team in a circle, throw a ball at each player, and scream instructions in their face before finally embracing them as they went out onto the pitch. His most famous trait involved devising slogans aimed at inspiring his team to further success. In Big Brother style, these slogans would then be posted around the Inter dressing room. The original master at mind games, Herrera would proudly declare that his team had often won the match before they even left for the dressing room. It was no idle boast. Against such formidable opposition, it is no surprise that most teams did indeed feel defeated before a ball had been kicked. Jockstein Celtic were not most teams. As Celtic arrived at the stadium to train and even before the final, they were met by the Inter team just finishing their session. Instead of retiring to the showers, the Italian players and their manager congregated on the touchline, and there they stayed, watching every second of Celtic's training routine. It was classic Herrera. The next day, May the 25th, with minutes remaining to kick off, the two teams were standing together in the tunnel. Jimmy Johnston would comment that the Inter players all looked like movie stars. For all Celtic's domestic dominance that season, it paled into insignificance in comparison to the achievements of these men who had conquered Europe and the world. Bertie Auld's response to this moment of apprehension has of course gone down in Celtic folklore. His leading of the players in singing the Celtic song, as they began the long walk up the tunnel, sent not just a message of defiance to Inter, but one of inspiration to Celtic. Inter may well have been grande, but Celtic too were also a grand old team to play for. Jock Steen then struck a psychological blow. He got reserve keeper John Fallon to claim the bench nearest the halfway line. This act did not impress the Inter officials. It was a small, seemingly trivial act of defiance. But what was clear to all was that this club, which for so long represented the underdog, would not now, in its finest hour, be bullied by anyone. When the players emerged from the tunnel, the Celtic team appeared blinking in the sunshine, like miners emerging from the bowels of the earth. Steen would have been forgiven for thinking back to his days as a collier. He'd come a long way, from toiling underground at Ernock Pit, to guiding Celtic to the summit of European football. He was now close to completing the most remarkable journey. But the giant of European football, Heleno Herrera, stood between him and this majestic peak. What happened over the next 90 minutes is written in the heart of every Celtic fan. Steen and Celtic did not defeat Inter, they destroyed them. The scoreline was 2-1, but reality was, this was a beating which left Inter and Herrera battered and broken. Catenaccio was savaged. Savaged by what Big Jock described as pure, beautiful, inventive football. How ironic, but it was a rampaging fullback who hit the cannonball shot that eventually breached Inter's resilient defence. That fine Tommy Gemmell strike was of course followed by Stevie Charmin's late winner. It was a goal which brought both victory and justice. It was also a goal that brought down the curtain on one of Europe's greatest ever club sides. Grande Inter were no more. And for Heleno Herrera, it was the beginning of the end. He would be sacked by Inter, and he never again came close to reaching the heights he had once so frequently scaled. What Jock Steen and Celtic achieved in Lisbon was much more than win the European Cup. They heralded a new era in football. They were a green and white whirlwind which blew away the football establishment and their old negative ways. Almost 80 years from the day they were founded to feed the poor in Glasgow's East End, Celtic Football Club had struck another blow for the underdog.
You walk through a storm. Hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky. Sweet silver song of love. Walk time.